Hello, Stacey, you beautiful soul.
Hello, Jay.
This is going to be a double podcast, so you're going to come on mine and I'm going to go on yours in this same audio.
Yes, it's a double trouble.
And tell me where you are right now in your life and what that means to you.
I've been looking forward to this show. I really have. Oh, can I swear? Yep.
Yeah,
well, also my show, so yes. I can answer my own questions. Where am I at right now? Okay. I'm in Melbourne, which for me brings up many things because it's my hometown and I've lived away for a long time, but I very much equate Melbourne to being a bit of a, I wouldn't say it's an anchor, but it's definitely my Achilles heel a bit on so many ways, in that it offers me this joy that nothing else does. But then I also get a bit, not naughty, but I play here in a way that I've understood is one part of playing. So I come home, so I'm a little bit hungover and I don't really drink that much anymore. But it was fun.
Yeah.
And I'm probably judging myself a little bit for not meditating. And I'm really happy.
Good.
I feel bright and I feel like I've gone through, I'm still really looking at 2018. I'm still kind of sitting in a, not reflection, but I feel like I'm really in a place every day. Over the past probably couple of weeks, every day I've felt like I've flourished from that year.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you what's the most relevant like mechanism that's going on in your mind at the moment in terms of what, you know, I guess on your own growth or your own development, like what's the thing that's challenging you the most right now?
Challenging?
Yeah.
I don't feel overly challenged at the moment, which I think is a big achievement for me because I'm a fixer. I grew up knowing that my role was to fix, and I really adjusted or kind of started to correct that a little bit last year. And so now usually if I get to a place of not even space, but kind of unity or some form of full circle, or even starting to understand why I might have gone through something really early stages though, I would start looking for the next thing to work on. And I don't quite have that today. In this morning. We'll see how I am at 5 o'clock this afternoon. But I've got a lot going on, and so it's quite interesting to think that I don't feel overly challenged. I feel very, my hands are up. I feel like I've worked very, very hard over the past year of surrendering. It's been my big buzzword.
Right.
And I don't know what I'm hanging on to today. Not a lot.
And tell me what some specific examples of what surrendering means to you.
Well, I think the big thing that I've realized over the past 12 months is there's a few words that we all have felt like we're quite entitled to have, or we're quite, that are just going to present themselves to us just because we're human. And I think surrender is one of them. Vulnerability is another. These types of words where you think they just come out of you as a part of your personality. But like vulnerability, surrender is a real action. And I didn't quite understand the concept of that. So I've really worked through a step-by-step process. I've got five key kind of ideas of how to surrender in my toilet. So I look at them and I choose one every day.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it could be if you're feeling the weight on your shoulders, surrender more. So you think you've surrendered. So say for example, I'm like, okay, I'm waiting back for an email on whether I'm going to get this column. And I'm sitting on the toilet and I'm looking at this sign and it says, are you still stressing about it? And I'm like, well, I've already surrendered. And then it's a reminder, well, you've got to surrender more. Not that you haven't surrendered, but there's more to surrender. There's more to surrender. So the biggest thing about surrender that I've learned is it is a real layered action and a real investment, but mostly a commitment. And I've found that to be incredibly freeing and incredibly difficult. But wow. if you can, it's probably one of the most powerful things I've done for myself.
Isn't it amazing what happens when you surrender, isn't it? It seems so the opposite to what we think we should do with a thing. Like, we think we should chase, grab, grip, or manifest that way. But to actually let go, you feel so much better inside yourself. And it allows kind of the ecosystem of consciousness to work through you and work with you more flowy, seamlessly, I guess. That's the kind of esoteric explanation.
Yeah, and there's a reason we don't trust what we can't see. You know, I understand the psychology around what's this energy thing you speak of, or what's this thing that's meant to flow through us. I can't see it, I can't grab it, I can't buy it. And so I get that, but you don't know a lot. So you might as well throw the dice. Like, none of us really know shit. And so it's not really that much of a risk when you think about it, by believing in something you can't buy or see. So it is interesting when you say that manifestation, because I think when I started doing a lot of self-work, I was much, much younger, kind of like 16, 17. I was candid Louise Hay, you can heal your life at 17. And so I started to get an idea of the fact that I could work with the universe to create my path, my life. And I didn't really like the one I was on. And I didn't judge where I came from, but I knew I wanted to not necessarily repeat what I inherited. But I couldn't see anything in front of me. I didn't have examples. So I really clung to that book. But what happened in that process, probably through my 20s, that I didn't quite understand, was I was very controlling on my manifestation. So I did manifest a lot of things, but I was quite strategic about it. And I would find myself thinking I was top shit. Like, look, I'm magic. I used to say, and I still say it to my girlfriends, like, but I'm magic. And we're all magic. But I just believe that I am. And I believe that everybody is. But really the power lies with when you believe it in yourself. You can't activate your magic until you believe your magic. So I can tell my friends they're magic, but they've got the on button. But I press mine on. But I was really kind of, and I would joke about that in my 20s. But then when I realized over the past few years how magic I could be when I started to properly surrender and not even control those manifestation things, because I think that manifestation conversation has been very much built that we can control our path, but there's still so much control in that. And I wasn't aware of that. So that was kind of my first step into having that idea around energy and how we can start to, work as a team with the world.
Yes.
But then I realized there was a whole new level, like in Mario, you know, Mario Brothers, like I reached this extra new level where it was like, if I surrender and don't necessarily even strategize how I get there. I used to think it was just surrendering the outcome. Now I've surrendered even getting there, and I've surrendered the idea that I might not even land with what I'm trying to manifest. It just will take me where it's supposed to take me.
And that's what's beautiful about life is when it does, because the best things I've found in life are the gifts, like, so the experiences that you get that you don't control.
The surprises.
Yeah. And that's the joyous part of that feels miraculous and miracle-like in life is when, and that they are, you can create more of them by softening your grip of what you want with an outcome. So I love that, the way you describe like non-attachment to outcome. Like you can have a preference, but I've discovered it's more about the actual intention. Like
totally.
So I intend to make people experience moments of joys through funny videos. Like, so that's my intention. How I do that, who I do it with, that's the kind of form, timing, that's all not up to me so much. Like I can still put it out there, ideas of what I want to do and who I want to work with. But it's really like, and I suppose the more you get signs back or collaborations back with people that you really want to work with, but you didn't expect to be possible, or whatever else.
Or the people that aren't even that big in there, or not big, but you know, those kinds of bigger goals. And then there's the smaller connections that you've had, of smaller by audience reach or not famous or these kinds of things that are the impact, that like the impact that those have that you don't necessarily bank on too.
Exactly. And it's more about the essence of the people that you work with than anything else rather than the reach and the potency of which the minds that you penetrate. But I think what I love about that is that it's kind of you're enjoying the ride of yourself rather than gripping, like really controlling it, which just breeds anxiety and all these kind of not so pleasant emotions, hey?
Oh, and I have lived a life with anxiety daily. So the difference it's made on that part of my life has been incredible. But there's a lot of shedding for you to get to live a life like this. You do need to shed a lot and you do need to... there's a few levels, I think. There's a lot, you know, you've kind of got to work up to it. When did you first think about the concept of manifestation? Because I was just thinking when I was handed that book and started to have that idea that there was a collaboration on offer with the way we live our life, I really started, you know, started to think and look at things differently.
What book was that?
The Louise Hay book. Right, yeah. Gotcha. But did you have a moment or was it something that you read or watched or?
I think it was a conviction from when I was about 16 and I was working jobs I didn't enjoy. And my dad said, that's just life. You work so you can have a life outside. And I was just like, nah, I'm not going to do that. And I think it was from that moment, I just held onto that idea quite strongly that I want to enjoy what I do in my days. And I want what I do to have meaning and to have... I just want to have fun, basically.
I wonder where that comes from. Like, where if it's innate in you, in your
DNA. It felt like it was innate in me.
Yeah.
But it was also a bit of a reaction to the world when I looked around and seen people in cubicles and I'm thinking, that looks
fucked. And to your dad.
Yeah.
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 Because he's the one saying it. You love him and, you know, you're like, whoa.
It just felt not right. And I think it's that not rightness that all kids have intuitively when they look at the world and go, why aren't we just dancing in trees and like playing on the beach? It's this kind of, what's wrong with the world? And I think there's this kind of indigo generation that's coming up now, the teenage kids that are woke per se and really just see the world more truly as it is and what we need to do. And they're taking that responsibility to shift it. But which gives you huge hope and it makes you look at the older generations and go, I'm not even going to try to change their minds.
Die off now.
Yeah, die off already. There's the new evolution of the species and let them come up
some
quick.
Some of them are aware of it. I reckon my dad is. Like, he said the most darkest thing to me yesterday. He was like, he really struggled after the, was it the GFC? You know, he really just did odd jobs here and there and did this incredible post about discrimination around the, like his age. He's 66. He couldn't get a job and he still wants to work. So God love him. He's now doing, and he was a businessman, sales, travel the, he's doing the traffic. He's a sign.
Oh yeah, holding the lollipop lady.
And it's like crazy hours. He's 66 and he goes to me, you know what? Like, you guys have got lots of things coming through. There's stuff we can't do. So if I die on the job, you'll get a lot of money. And I'm like, Dad, what do you mean? He was like, I'm going anyway. What can we do? There's a lot of change. It's got to come. And I was like, what the fuck? This is yesterday morbid. Sitting in South Bank. And I'm like, Dad, he's just laughing. And I was like, I think he's just aware. I think he's aware.
Yeah.
And he's got no interest in changing it either.
That's beautiful.
It is pretty impressive.
See, that's different. That's beautiful. That's a real, like, that's a gorgeous thing. That's wisdom, you know, like, and I think older generations can offer wisdom, providing they've grown.
They also need to be, I guess, accountable for what they can and can't offer at that point too.
Right,
you know, like, I'm not saying that people that are of age can't offer anything, but he knows what his offering is, you know, and he knows, and I don't think he is at a point where he gives a shit if that's good enough for someone or not.
Oh, and that's the point we should be at. Like, I feel like it's just doing things that, what I'm realizing is doing things to other people. I think I can look so introspectively sometimes that I just create problems out of thin air.
Yeah.
And I don't end up I've realized that the greatest joy I can have is when I'm in service to other people or being there with other people as I am in the moment. And that's what I want to make my work about. And I think it always has been about that, like in the sense of I wanted to make people smile. That's what my earliest memory of doing what I do. I didn't ever think I'd work in like comedy, but I just producing videos that make people smile makes me so happy because I know that I'm impacting someone's state of consciousness in a joyful way. And
for those of you that are listening on my show, Jez worked with Hamish Nandy for a really long time. So the reach that you guys have had too is just when you think about that, and there's obviously all the elements and the accolades and the success, but just to break all of that away and think about the amount of people you've made smile. Mm. Like, because that's what really is what ticks you, like makes you tick.
Mm.
Fuck, man.
I know.
Because I know what you do. I'm in the industry, you know, but if you break all that crap away, the Hamish Nandy big no name, all of that, leave all that on the side. And then you think about all the people who have smiled because you put that together. It's crazy.
It makes me so happy. Because even I feel like I'm facilitating their comedy. Like I'm just a mechanic in the operation. But you can, in the way you cut a narrative, you can pull out the essence of it and refine it in a way that magnifies it or makes it, you know, more powerful, I guess. But it's so easy when you're working with someone like Hamish Nandy. But collectively, like I did a count stat on my videos the other day, and over working with like Tesla, Russell Brand, Hamish Nandy,
a few
other ones, and my own ones as well, because a bunch of mine have gone viral as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's accumulated to 1.5 billion views. So I've felt very happy at that.
And most of them will have, if not all, some form of smile. You know, that's your style.
Yeah. They all into, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun is it's more fun than funny.
Yeah.
So any video, it's just like the litmus test is, does this feel fun or did it make me giggle? That's really it.
Yeah.
And then underneath that, what I'm trying to do more and more of is embed seeds of enlightened thinking or expanded thoughts that make people think a little bit outside the box. And it's kind of that enlightened comedy. So you soften the anatomy with a moment of joy and then you penetrate deeper into their soul with an insight that will help them. Rather than giving that insight, which a lot of spiritual teachings do, in a dry state, which everyone has walls up around. So I find that it's a really potent two-punch combo to soften and then deliver an insight, because people are more likely to listen to something that will help them in a more objective way if their walls are down.
Well, Tracy Spicer said that when I was thinking about really launching and concentrating on the Thinker Girls, I said, I want to have people in my generation proud to be a feminist, not want to be that. You know, there was a real, probably about 5 or 6 years ago, it was even, you know, it was just shitty, particularly chicks my age or a bit younger. And she was just like, make it funny. So I did.
And it showed, man. I had so many girlfriends that would come up to me or tell me about Thinker Girls, and they just loved the fact that you're intelligent woman being proud and funny. Like proud is in the sense of proud of your femininity, your divine feminine capabilities of what only females have. and celebrating them but in a fun way and thinking about things in an intelligent way. So it's not just this whitewash of bollocks that is in entertainment.
And I think particularly for women, we've got so many facets, and I think we've been so boxed. You feel like you need to come out as a comedian on ABC that wears a cardigan, or you need to be the weather girl, or you need to be the scientist, you know, whereas I feel I'm a lot of different things. And I think a lot of women find themselves that there are a lot of different things. And so I think we access that on the show a lot too. And it was hard because in a commercial environment, we were still, people were still trying to box you. And we'd be in sales meetings and going, no, but and it just wouldn't gel, you know, it was a difficult process. I think, like we were saying before we started recording, we're just a little bit ahead of that time. I think it's a very different conversation now, which is great. But I really, back to that I guess, idea of some quite complex, or maybe not complex, but quite big conversations about who we are, what makes us tick, what's important, like the real important stuff, and finding a lighter, approachable way to talk about it. That style that you're doing your work, and something that I really resonate with, because I do think that some of the conversations that we're both having on our shows, it can be a little elitist now. Like there's almost this idea that spirituality and self-care and self-awareness is this, sure, we had like a year or two of wokeness, and now it's become, it can go really far the other way where it's not really approachable for a lot of people.
Totally.
And so I totally match that, I guess, desire to open that up for people.
Oh, you speak to my heart.
Do you know as well, when you speak about the stuff that you're truly passionate about, your accent becomes thicker?
Does it? Yeah, it's funny. Maybe it's because it's my childhood self.
Well, it's your true self.
Yeah, right.
You're talking from the source.
Right.
Or it's talking through you. I'm not sure about that. Maybe it's a bit of both.
My teenage years, I guess, or something.
Or your divine is like, that, I don't know, and it's coming out so truly.
Divine is a Cockney geezer.
He's in that with a long beard.
Oliver Twist.
Like a wizard. He's a wizard.
No, I like him just being a chimney sweeper.
Okay.
But flipping spirituality on its head, that's what I feel is so relevant, in me at least, but like as well as you, clearly. But making it punk and dangerous and fun and radical, because that's all the things that it is. And this, a lot of spiritual teachings are very serious and woo-woo and very overpriced. That's my exact conviction of Discount Meditation Club that I started.
Yeah,
I'll put
that in my show notes too, because so many people are looking to find ways to start. And I just, the only thing I can send them to is, my husband's here, he calls the Deepak and Oprah combo. What do you call the combo? OPAC, yeah. I send them a lot to OPAC, which is the Deepak and Oprah free meditation a handful times of a year. But if people are starting, I say, wait for that. It's free and it's really easy.
Yeah.
But you're right. There's not many places I've had to send people for free or cheap ways to learn.
Well, I've been teaching for free for about 3 years, and this is the first one. I'm basically teaching what Transcendental Meditation charged $1,500 for. It's 95% the same.
I've never done
technique.
It. I don't refuse. I was never called. Like,
right.
I always just taught myself, and I went to different courses, picked up different things, checked in with myself of what I needed. It could be music. It could be saying some mantras I learned at the end of a yoga class, and one particular chick's got the organ out and she's singing and I took the words home. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
I've always just taught myself.
DIY.
But there's a reason for that. It's something that doesn't really click with that kind of price for me.
Mm.
I thought I might get there, but now that you're saying it, I feel like I didn't need to. Like, there's this new conversation like you're having, which is why? Why is it money?
It's a $2 billion industry, transcendental meditation. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi started it. He's basically teaching a technique that was taught like 5,000 years ago. It's just a very simple mantra-based technique, and that it's a hyper powerful but hyper simple technique. And you know that TM sued, after Maharishi passed, TM sued Tom Knowles for starting Vedic meditation, which is basically the same as TM. And they lost, but they spent millions of dollars trying to sue someone for spreading more meditation, which was the general consensus of TM when it started, which is to create world peace and get everyone meditating, or as many people meditating as possible.
Can you imagine if people started suing each other for the rights to the law of attraction? Or the universe, you know, to surrendering.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking about surrendering, we get sued by the captain of surrendering. Like,
which is frightening.
Dude, that's no. And that's why, you know, even when I've started to do a bit of coaching, and I'm like, this isn't my stuff. This is everyone's stuff.
Exactly.
I'm just showing you what I've done, but it's not my teachings for you. Mm. I'm showing you how I am sharing how I have done it for me.
And that's super important with teaching, is only speak from your own experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because what generally happens as you learn from gurus or teachers is that they only release truth that bubbles up from within you. So therefore it's your truth. Like the greatest teacher Tom Knowles is actually great in that sense. He said, if anything rings true in you that I say, it's your truth, not mine. And I like the ownership of that, because it's he's which I think is truth. He's saying, I'm not the author of this knowledge. I'm just a conduit for the consciousness to flow through me. I've cleared my channel a fuckload, and that's why I can have such dope wisdom flowing through me. But he advises, like, for example, Hollywood heads, has no clue about Hollywood whatsoever, but then just has downloads of what they should do to resolve problems between making two films that they can't make at the same time, for example. And like 2 weeks later, they come back to him saying that thing worked. And it's just his state of consciousness is so expanded that he's able to. And that's what that thing that you said before, it's just a continuum, this a path of expansion. Like, and even that in itself, I'm feeling a bit off at the moment, because it's like, all it really is now. Like, I know some friends that don't have any spiritual knowledge, but they are the most spiritual beings I know, because they're just so in the fucking moment.
I've got one of them, yeah.
They're brilliant. They're brilliant. And it made me...
It was funny. We were at a table last night. Sorry to interrupt. And this particular friend's never seen a therapist, and all of us had seen the same therapist. It was hilarious. So we were talking about our joint therapist and this one friend that is very similar has never seen a therapist, but she just packs this inner angel. She's just got this wisdom. It's just amazing. Insane. And I'm so lucky to have found some form of strength in that, because being comparing yourself to someone like that since you've known maybe since they're 12, and I've gone through just drag my resistance and chaos and storms and sex and drugs and all the, and she's like, dim, 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 dim. And I could, you know, I could have really resisted that having her in my life, but I just constantly looked at her like she was from heaven. And it was so lovely in a time where I often didn't. And we've, obviously she would say that I've given her lots too. It's in exchange. But those people are like,
oh my God,
fascinating.
They've already arrived. Like, if there isn't a right destination.
How?
I don't know.
It's interesting.
They're lucky as fuck.
Yeah.
Because we do have to do work to get there. But also, I'm finding it's like letting go of the work right now. That's what I'm finding, is just like writing in my gratitude journal every morning. Just, I'm fucking grateful to be breathing air, to exist, and to have moments in my health. And that's really...
Sometimes I chuck in the pen. Sometimes I'm grateful for this pen that I'm writing in, because I'm like, I don't know today. And I just have to find it. Do you know in OPAC, I was doing it last week, one of the gratitude ones. It's actually a really nice month, like they're doing. It's all about gratitude.
Mm.
And they were saying, I think, I don't know if it was, well, now they've become one person. But so OPAC was saying, I don't know which one, that when you do your gratitude journal, or if you are a journaler, or, you know, whichever way you practice gratitude, that it's really important to say, I'm grateful for this, that camera stand, because it's helping you, whatever. You've got to imagine the camera stand going, I received that. Like, kind of, thanks. So it's an exchange.
Ah.
And I started doing that. So like, okay, grateful for the fact that, you know, we live right near the water. But I actually got so specific. I'm like, okay, I'm grateful for that body of water. And then imagine the water being like, no worries, Stace. Like, and it did something. It like expanded it.
Wow.
It was like, it was so cool. I was like,
sounds like the beginnings of going nutty.
This is how my brain works. But it's like a little girl, like playing all the time. Like, and I'm like, because I just really work on, if something feels good, then I don't really care how it sounds. Mm. You know, so it does sound, and I don't really, I've become...
No, I'm in full support of what you're doing.
Yeah, I know, but I've become more confident with saying these stories, because I've been living like this for a long time and been living privately like this for a long time.
Right.
So everyone's always got a bit of an idea that I've been a bit of a self-help person, but no one had any idea just how spiritual I was. It was like a secret. But I didn't mean for it to be a secret. It was just my own world. I've always had that.
I wonder why. Did it make it more precious or potent in your activities of it when you don't share it? Because I think there's...
Yeah. Maybe? Especially because I shared so much.
Right.
You know, once I started to do the podcast, the Thinker Girls podcast, and then the radio show and those types of things, and I was sharing, you know, like my what I was using a diva cup instead of a tampon, or what's my sex life was, or what I thought about who I was voting for, like all these kinds of things that people don't share. So I suppose to some degree, even when I started to talk a little bit about spirituality, I never really took it into that radio station. It was funny. Mm. I'll talk about, and now I've got it in a, and now I talk about it so much, but it's on my own show by myself.
Mm.
So it's interesting that I still don't really go step by step by everything that I do. I share what I feel like I've called to at that time, but I guess it's still a bit of a mystery to everyone. It's still a mystery to me. And that's the essence of it, I think. It's kind of the fun. You know, sometimes I even try and explain to my husband how the things are working in my head. And I have maybe the last few years just started to put names to guides or voices I hear. And that's been quite scary to say out loud because I've been hearing them for a long time.
Mm.
And I'm like, I don't want to be a psychic. I don't, that's not. But because I can get to myself to such a, I guess it was what you were talking about before of that that real clear streamline. I look at you kind of used your hands to go expanded out ways, but I really, for me, in my picture, it's very much a line straight up and through me to the ground like a tree, but then goes up energy all the way to forever and ever away.
Awesome.
And I, well, and so the clearer that is, or the timing depends. I don't really choose it.
Mm.
I'll get a message, and now I've just started to say, "What's your name?" And then one time it was Ben's dad, who's passed. And I said, "Can you tell me something?" And he said, he just said another name. And I get nervous even saying this story. And I said to Ben, and I didn't say anything about this exchange, but I said, "Who is this person, this other man's name in your dad's life?" And Ben just looked and was like, and we've only been together for a couple of years. I didn't, you know, his daddy passed. And he said, "It's my dad's best mate." And I was like, okay. Ooh. Okay.
That's crazy.
This is okay.
Yeah. But also,
I believed, but that recognition's different.
And I mean, part of me is like, always amazed at the beauty of that, but a part of me is also like, of course, of course we have access to all this knowledge that's just in the ether or in consciousness itself. Like it's like a whole field of in the cosmos that's interconnected somehow, it seems, because there's so many stories again and again, like what you're saying, which are materializations of sort of consciousness or unmanifested consciousness coming into your channel,
which we are all capable of accessing. That's the really important part for me in my direction and the things I want to talk about moving forward, is that everyone is capable, and not that you necessarily want to speak to your husband's dead dad. it's not an aim for me, but it just shows you that there's magic, that maybe you listening are still not 100% sure of what your access is. You have just as much access as me and Jez and, you know, everyone. It's just, it's, you know, it's a practice.
It's a
clearing.
It is. So two things. Like, one, first thing is like, it really just screams to me the core point that we do control in this miraculous world is that our attitude toward it, obviously, and how we navigate, but then so much that we don't have control over. So I'd be really interested to know what you feel like are your key principles daily that you like. For me right now, it's being calm and grounded and not stimulating or overstressing myself, my anatomy in any way. And that's really important for me. But what's like, and it's always changing, I suppose, as well, but what's your key principles that you do?
Like at the moment, it's my focus. I generally have it written on the blackboard. I've got a little blackboard at the front door, and that will change depending on, and I've always been like this. I'll have a word or a phrase, something that has come through me through an angel card or a quote that stuck with me, and I'll be like, okay, it'll connect. It all kind of just connects, and I'll be not necessarily staring at it and working on it and doing dances around the house, reciting whatever the, but it will be kind of this, it's like a, I'm going to cough, sorry. It's like a human way to connect to whatever it is I'm supposed to be working on at the time that doesn't have a language. It has more of a feeling. So it might be trust, for example. And then I'll be working on ways to do that, which might be if my partner, for example, says that he's going to do something and I'm not sure if he is, activate it there. If I'm not 100% sure about if that's going to take its path from a work perspective, will I get that email back? Trust whichever way I'm supposed to go. So I start to kind of have themes and then I try to use them in different parts of my life as a focus. Like I've always done this little, I see life as my own course. I always have. Mm. So I live like that very naturally. I've always lived like that because I'm fascinated by it. It's just there's so much to learn and as I said before, it's all a bit magic if you throw it up and play with it. And so again, I'm sure I sound a bit cuckoo, but it's how I kind of live. And so yeah, I think at the moment it is it's not thinking about tomorrow, and it sounds kind of cliche, and I don't really work on things like that broad. Usually it's a bit more specific, but on the same token, because I have felt over the past week or so not overly challenged or not having a need to fix anything, I've tried to enjoy that. And so if you think about tomorrow, it's very easy to then make that feeling go away. So I'm just kind of in the moment.
So
I feel like my cough's coming up because I'm feeling exposed because I shared that story about that voice coming through. As soon as I shared it, I was like, oh, I started to like look around, like I had to bring myself back down.
Really?
Mm.
Is that because what do you think it is about it?
It's just shy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just getting nervous. You're not nervous about what people think. I don't really care, but it's private. It's personal.
Yeah, I think it's very important to have these kind of keep things areas like personal and private, some things. I definitely have a tendency to overshare and share everything because I grew up in a Christian sect. So I felt like I could only actually open my life up to this small group of people. And then so when I broke away from it at 24, I overshared to everyone and anyone, and then I realized that not a lot of people actually were inquiring. So I then dialed it back to what's relevant, I guess, and if there's inquiry.
How have you found that with the show, with doing your own podcast now? How do you check in with yourself on that?
Yeah, I think when it affects other people, that's when I question it. I think the stuff around the being born into that highly religious thing, I have a tendency to just share that because I think it's important to share it and get it out of me. But then we're like, if I'm in a relationship with a woman, not sharing about our relationship is important because, but previously I would just do that. But then after some mistakes and realizing that what they want, it's not fair to, and I chose not to. And I like that. I like keeping areas of my life private and they feel more special, I guess.
Yeah.
And there's places for that, and there's and maybe that it's always up for grabs as well and up for being changed depending on who's being affected.
I think it depends on what you're learning at that time. I think for me, at any type of sharing, and this goes for anyone that has a podcast or a radio show or just an Instagram account, you know, we all can share. We've all got access to share so much. So I think it's so important to check in with where you've found yourself on the healing process or the dealing process first and foremost. And then you can think about sharing. I think because if you're sharing before you've shared with yourself, then that's where I find we're finding the oversharing thing happening, is that I think it's not a bad thing that we share, and these platforms and this technology, there's good to that. But I think the thing we're missing is sharing and having curiosity and conversation with ourselves first about that. We want affirmation that we're going to be okay, or we're, and that's okay sometimes, but if you're finding yourself to jump to that point before you've inquired with you and had that sharing exchange with yourself, I think that's where that's where some of the cringing comes from, or why is everyone sharing?
I'd say it actually comes down to intent, because I feel like there can be cases when you do it, you share like almost childlike, innocently, oversharing, quote unquote, and it's actually adorable because it's the person just wants to be open and wants to connect with people. And then there's times when, and this is why I think the core of it comes down to intention, where you overshare and it's because you want validation, or you want a sense of feeling comfortable or comfort, or I mean, I'm speaking from my own experience. I know the difference when I share something. Like I shared a photo of myself crying once, and I shared it because I just felt like
I've done that too, actually.
I share this aspect of myself that is not really on this social media landscape at the moment, and I feel like it's just a real thing to do. I'm unresolved about it, but it's just something I'm going through, and this is why I'm crying, and sometimes I feel sad.
It's true.
But then there could be another time when I did that exact same thing, but it'd be from an intention of I need comfort, help me, hug me. And that's a shit way to describe it, but you know what I'm saying?
Like, no, I do.
And in those situations that the intention is, I guess, neediness or something else, and it's less innocent. And I think it's the innocence that is where the beauty is.
And when I say check in with yourself, I don't mean you, and I agree with you, I don't mean you have to resolve it. I think we just are really quick to not want to talk to ourselves about anything.
That's a good point. Yeah,
so you need to talk to yourself to find the intention.
Yes.
So even a step before that.
Yes.
You know, like everyone doesn't, no one wants to talk to themselves. You know.
Or talk to a close friend that you can get mirrored what you're going through. I find helps sometimes as well. Because sometimes when you talk to yourself in some states of anxiety, it's very hard to see clarity.
Yeah, true. True. But I think, yeah, and I think that's where I probably become, not preachy, but I find it important that if you are a person like that, that meditation or things for you to ease that is important, because sometimes a friend might be asleep.
Yeah.
You know?
Literally.
They might work night shift and then be asleep at 3 p.m. and you're fucked.
You've only got yourself. So meditation is the only option.
We're all doomed. It's so true. Well, I don't know anyone on night shift, so no, I'm good.
I know what you mean, like self-inquiry and self-awareness. Very, very crucial.
And it can be at any, you know, it can be reflected in any way. I just really, I'm quite surprised that when I started to come out of my spiritual closet, that so many people would just couldn't even look at themselves properly in the mirror. You know, and I think when I thought about sharing some things to try and help people, you know, who are you, and you haven't done all these courses, you've got to go back to school and do therapy, and I don't want to do therapy, I just want to share what I've learned. And so I got through that, but I really realized very quickly that I would
is there a better course than life itself?
It's true. And I believe that, but it's this other mind that, you know, or the judger. And sometimes you can even put them on specific people that follow yours. You know, there's a face to it. And they may be absolutely unaware that you're doing anything or not give a shit, but they've become the face of that voice. You know, it's bizarre. And so anyway, once I worked through that, I realized that not only would I be sharing early stage stuff for me that I learned years ago, but really, really basic, back to the beginner steps, which is when you brush your teeth, look in the mirror at your eyes, like look at yourself. It's just that's the beginning.
Wait a minute, what's that? I've never heard of that.
But don't you feel like, even before you think about meditating or doing anything, so many people can't look at themselves.
Right.
To address that they're there. Does that make sense? Like,
really
not
sees.
Your thoughts, not your physical, you just looking at you, because your eyes are the quickest way for you to get to that intuition that everyone's trying to get to. They live, it's, that's a kind of direct line.
What a gift a mirror is.
Mirror work's so important. I have a little awesome. Mirror next to my meditate. Like, I think affirmations are completely, they like pack way more of a punch with the eye work, the mirror work. It's just this, I don't know, I just feel like maybe it's also a real girl thing, like a real woman thing. Like, I feel like we look at ourselves for so long in the mirror doing makeup and hair, and but we're not really looking.
Not like you are when you're on acid staring in the mirror.
Oh, I'm still thinking about acid. I just don't know if I felt like I was never going to do it, and now I want to do it. And I'm thinking of more other, just different kinds of state of different, to take
mind
me to different,
yeah.
I haven't quite experimented there, and thinking about starting a family, I kind of feel like I don't want to go down this traditional road of you need to do all this stuff before you have a baby and all that kind of stuff. But it has made me think about, is there time for me? So random.
Can I afford to go to Rainbow Servant this year?
Can I get a babysitter? Hey, Mum, I want to go take some hardcore drugs. It's cool. It's the good shit.
Yeah, it's quality. Yeah. So you've done ayahuasca?
No, I haven't. No, and DMT. I was listening to your podcast with Ash Hart about it, and I was just hanging off every word. Yeah, no, I haven't done. What's the D one again?
DMT.
DMT.
Dimethyltryptamine. It's the active ingredient in ayahuasca, but you can smoke it, and you get experience it for a short period of time.
Yeah, someone was saying to me it was a bit shorter and an easier kind of. So I think.
Well, it's not easier.
Kind of approach.
Yeah.
But not easier, you say?
No, I mean. It's probably easier than ayahuasca because it's not as long term, but I haven't done ayahuasca.
Oh, you haven't? I thought you had done it.
No.
And no interest?
I don't feel called to right now because I think it's something like you have to feel completely.
Well, that's right. And that's why it's hilarious that I'm thinking about this with my fertility plans. Like, I completely agree with you. It's just one of those things. It's like, oh no, I'm not going to compare it to what I was going to compare.
What were you going to compare it to?
I was going to compare it to the fact that I'd never kissed a girl. I was never called to do it authentically. Cool. But do you know what I mean? Like, I need to pass you. I mean, there was plenty of times at boutique where I got drunk and was like, oh yeah, but I didn't. Yeah. But it was funny because even when I was younger and everyone was experimenting and it wasn't about whether with bisexuality or it wasn't called bisexuality, I was always still so serious. Like, I'd always had this kind of, it doesn't align with me, even at 21, 22. So I never had that. But that's what I mean by called, because that's that's how I feel. If I do anything, I generally have lived like that for a long time without knowing what the label was.
Yes, yes. It's an awesome free way to do. And then it's like, I know for sure I'm not gay because I've tried to be gay with people. You know, like I feel like I know I'm not gay more than a straight guy that's never kissed a man knows they're not gay.
I said to my husband before, because I wasn't sure if I wanted to get married, and I said, there's a few things that are on, like, I'm still unsure about. Like, I'm like, I've never experienced that. And I do find that I'm quite an open-minded person. That doesn't mean sexually that's where I, you know, who I am. But I'm still like, I think the conversation's open in the world about this. Like, you know, you never know. So I'm just putting it out there. And he was like, cool. It's just so random. I just want to be very clear on on all of these things that I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Because if we're going to do this piece of paper, I want to come in honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was it. And there was like one other thing of, I think the other thing I said was I don't want to get to a point where we're not our best selves for a really long time just because we signed a piece of paper. And then that was it. And then off we went to City Hall.
How fun. How exciting. What a commitment.
Yeah, fuck yeah. I resisted that.
Did you?
Yeah, that was like, it's interesting. Those kinds of conversations, yeah, I find them, like we were saying earlier, really private. So it is hard to hear them, and I respect that now. I used to be a bit kind of everybody should share, and you know, and now I really, especially after I miscarried, there's just some things you don't understand until you're in it, and you can't say for someone to share. Not that I would ever go up and say, share your story, but I often find it important for stories to be told that aren't, because I think it connects us. But like you were saying earlier, I've also grown up and realized at times things are sacred, and that's important to be aware of what is. So conversations around our marriage before and after are very sacred, but I do think a lot of people don't talk about how it's not necessarily all roses. You know, you are making a big commitment, and if you've had a life and you didn't have the perfect parent example, there's resistance, man. Like, oh, I had it. Even getting a ring, I was like, it was work. I had to work through some self-worth issues for sure.
Wow.
It was, we were out the front of the jeweler and I couldn't get out of the car. I just couldn't get out of the car to go see this ring that we'd designed. Just was like, I couldn't do it. And it was so bizarre. I didn't know why. And I had to really work through that. It was a beautiful piece of jewelry. And I just didn't understand why I needed it. I was like, I got Ben. I don't need anything else. And it was like, the jeweler was so great. She was like, it's just a celebration. It's just a symbol. It doesn't have to, you know, it doesn't have to mean much more than that. But I wasn't sure if it was because I didn't need it really, or if I just couldn't give to myself, receive.
And you think it was that? That's what it was?
Well, I wasn't really marrying Ben for a ring. Like that was, and I didn't even, you know, I just was so wrapped that I found someone so, you know, aligned and spiritual and kind and, you know, all those things that I, you know, there's just in a man is just so, I was jackpot, you know. So those things were the last thing I was worried about, of how we committed or what that looked like. I just was really wrapped. But when I did meet him, I thought, oh, okay, I could seriously commit to you. And I hadn't felt that before. So when I wasn't sure if I'd get married, I knew when I met Ben that I was like, oh, this is what it feels like of people that want to do this, because I met you, not just thinking about it before I met someone. So interesting, we think about commitment before we've met anyone to commit to.
Yeah, it's just a total idea.
Yeah, so when I met him, I was like, okay, I get that. So then I think with all of the other stuff around it, which is why we eloped, because I really didn't like a lot of the distraction of that core energy
in a ceremony
or
in a
That real, I just wanted it to be us, to make sure that that energy was contained to our ceiling, like our kind of ceiling. So the ring was a part of it, and it was just a nice part of it, and I just resisted. I think it really was that simple, that I just found it quite overwhelming to receive all of that at once. And so you can very much wish for all the good, and then when it comes, it's not always easy to take.
So interesting. Hey, because I can see that why the notion of marriage is, it can query it with the mind. Because like, I've gone through phases of like, I'm definitely going to marry. Then other phases like, I didn't see the point. I'd rather have like 10-year anniversary parties to celebrate the love of how far we've come each 10 years or something or other. But I also see the beauty in marriage and committing to someone. And like you say, I think that's the most important test for it, is like, I feel like I want to commit to you. That's all that really matters. So
well, then you'll be called, like I was saying, I'm kind of called to everything.
Exactly.
You're called there because it's based on a feeling,
yes,
not a thought,
yes, exactly,
or a plan or a strategy, you know. And
it's entirely dependent on a specific other individual. You don't come up with that feeling in isolation. I feel right about marrying someone when I haven't even got someone I want to marry. It's like, it's so funny. Absurd.
It's so hilarious. And you grow up thinking I'm going to be a bride and all this stuff, and you're like, you haven't met anyone. So it can't happen.
It's really the courage before the horse, or what's the thing?
It's bizarre. And it's like, what about if you meet the absolute, and this might happen, like there's no judgment if that is something that you really want. Or maybe there is a bit of judgment, I don't know. But it's like,
I feel a little bit.
Yeah, there is, where you go, imagine you find the perfect motherfucker, like the most perfect person for you, and they don't want to get married, and you're like, see ya.
Totally.
Isn't that insane?
It is. And what I also find crazy is how it changes. Like, you know, I'm not going to be specific, but sometimes with someone you don't feel like you want to marry them, and then later you feel like you want to marry them, and because of things change, or vice versa. Like I've had both situations where I've been with someone that I've instantly wanted to marry, and then later realized I absolutely don't want to marry. And then I've been with someone that I was like, I can't see us spending our life together, and now I can absolutely, everything makes sense to spend my life with you.
I feel like when I thought that, I get that, and I think, but when you were with that person that you thought you wanted to marry and then you certainly didn't, did you think after, when you didn't want to marry that person, that actually you were more interested in the idea of marriage?
Yes, I think it was a bit of an insecure thing. It was more of like, oh, I found someone. This is what I do next. Mm. And I can see that fantasy that I had as a kid playing out with this person, because marriage, having kids, is the thing that's been recycling in my head since I was a teenager, just because I grew up in a Christian household, mm-hmm. and also a lot of people just grew up with that idea. Mm. And then it was probably quite attached to that dysfunctional idea. And then the second time it just makes sense. It kind of like all the characteristics of that person align so beautifully against my characteristics, and it just felt more natural.
Yeah, right. It's so interesting at the reasons that we do what we do.
Mm.
So with the podcast,
yeah,
is there, we've spoken so much about not having plans.
Mm.
Is there a plan, even though we're like sitting here going, we're in surrender? Yeah. But I guess dream. Right, or you have vision.
Oh, with my podcast, I've never...
The next direction, maybe it's more of a... Because it's the podcast and then the website and the meditation stuff, I suppose, are they all separate, or are they a part of some form of vision for you?
My podcast is just something I enjoy doing, so I don't do it for money. I just do it as an excuse to have quality conversations with people. That's it. And connect with people on multi-layers and... explore the depths of realities and people in a fun, playful way. That's my only intention of it, and I don't really have any life goal trajectory with it. But with my company, which I just started this year, called Soma Unlimited, that's kind of designed to make to work with people, to make education programs, and to make media that is fun but also insightful. And so that's my main trajectory, is wake up the broadest amount of people in the shortest amount of time using the social media landscape, which is where everyone's face is plummeted. And then if I can drop insightful shit that will help them in a fun, radical way, great, I'm winning. That's really
what I care about. How do you go with the idea of business around something that is kind of quite sacred or spiritual? Like, how do you merge that? Because I've found that a bit of a... not a rocky road, but I've got to navigate it.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of navigation that I haven't experienced before. Because I was saying before, I'd hidden this part of myself for so long.
I think it's finding the niches, finding the audiences of people that... I mean, like, there's a thousand ways you can answer that question. For me specifically, it's finding people who have an audience that is interested in... more expanded states of thinking, or open-minded, or whatever you want to call it, and then working with people like that to produce better work with them. That's mainly it. What's your thoughts on it?
Just with earning money, and finding comfort in that, because I find some of this stuff is just so life's work. Like, we all have access to it, or those kinds of things. It's like charging, but I think I've landed on it now, where it's just a feeling-based decision as each decision arises, not some big, company mantra that I then have to live by for the next 3 years. It's just bit by bit. It's just me now, so I can do that. It's just me, and I can make those decisions and make sure that they take the time to check in with my body and make them bit by bit, which is just... it can be my own business model, which is a spiritual one. And if it feels good then tick and be honest about that. Just as long as I can do that, then that's the best I can do.
Mm. Beautiful, Stace. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
And thanks for inviting me. Yeah, I know. And I feel like it was just a nice timing of when I saw your show. I was like, oh, this is divine and exciting. And I found it really inspiring. Mm. So timing-wise, it feels like we're little brother and sister with this little adventure.
We got to know each other a little bit better.
Yeah.
And thank you for the vulnerability and the openness. And you're blatantly glowing with total radiance. So keep shining.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
That's love.